Chapter 7. Close race and a hot one, and getting hotter every day. Both had strong appetites for money. Each had bought a great tract of land, with a purpose. There was going to be a new railway, and each wanted to be in the legislature and help locate the route to his own advantage. A single vote might make the decision, and with a two or three fortunes. The stake was large, and Harkness was a daring speculator. He was sitting close to the stranger. He leaned over while one or another of the other symbols was entertaining the house with protests and appeals, and asked, in a whisper, "What is your price for the sack?"
$40,000.
"I'll give you 20.
"No."
"25.
"No."
"Say 30. "The price is $40,000, not a penny less."
"All right, I'll give it.
I will come to the hotel at 10 in the morning. I don't want it known. We'll see you privately."
"Very good."
Then the stranger got up and said to the house, "I find it late. The speeches of these gentlemen are not without merit, not without interest, not without grace. Yet if I may be excused, I will take my leave. I thank you for the great favor which you have shown me in granting my petition. I ask the chair to keep the sack for me until tomorrow, and to hand these 3 $5,100 notes to Mr. Richards." They were passed up to the chair. "At 9 I will call for the sack, and at 11, will deliver the rest of the 10,000 to Mr. Richards in person at his home. Good night." Then he slipped out, and left the audience making a vast noise, which was composed of a mixture of cheers, the Ikado song, dog-disapproval, and the chant, "You are far from being a bad man-a-man." IV, at home the Richardses had to endure congratulations and compliments until midnight. Then they were left to themselves. They looked a little sad, and they sat silent and thinking. Finally Mary sighed and said, "Do you think we are to blame, Edward, much to blame?" And her eyes wandered to the accusing triplet of big banknotes lying on the table, where the congratulators had been gloating over them, and reverently fingering them. Edward did not answer at once, then he brought out a sigh and said, hesitatingly, We couldn't help it, Mary. It was ordered. All things are." Mary glanced up and looked at him steadily, but he didn't return the look. Presently she said, "I thought congratulations and praises always tasted good. But it seems to me, now Edward?"
"Well?
Are you going to stay in the bank?"
No.
"Resign?"
"In the morning by note.
It does seem best." Richards bowed his head in his hands and muttered, "Before I was not afraid to let oceans of people's money pour through my hands, but Mary, I am so tired, we will go to bed." At 9 in the morning the stranger called for the sack, and took it to the hotel in a cab. At 10 Harkness had a talk with him privately. The stranger asked for, and got 5 checks on the Metropolitan Bank drawn to ear, 4 for $1,500 each, and 1 for $34,000. He put one of the former in his pocketbook, and the remainder, representing $38,500, he put in an envelope, and with these he added a note which he wrote after Harkness was gone. At 11 he called at the Richards house and knocked. Mrs. Richards peeped through the shutters, then went and received the envelope, and the stranger disappeared without a word. She came back flushed and a little unsteady on her legs, and gasped out, "I am sure I recognized him. Last night it seemed to me that maybe I had seen him somewhere before. He is the man that brought the sack here? I am almost sure of it. Then he is the ostensible Stevenson who, and sold every important citizen in this town with his bogus secret. Now if he has sent checks instead of money, we are sold too, after we thought we had escaped. I was beginning to feel fairly comfortable once more, after my night's rest, but the look of that envelope makes me sick. It isn't fat enough. $8,500 in even the largest banknotes makes more bulk than that.
Edward, why do you object to checks?
Checks signed by Stevenson. I am resigned to take the $8, 500 if it could come in banknotes, for it does seem that it was so ordered, Mary, but I have never had much courage, and I have not the pluck, to try to market a check signed with that disastrous name. It would be a trap. That man tried to catch me, we escaped somehow or other, and now he is trying a new way. If it is checks, oh, Edward, it is too bad. And she held up the checks, and began to cry. Put them in the fire. Quick. We mustn't be tempted. It is a trick, to make the world laugh at you less, along with the rest, and give them to me, since you can't do it. He snatched them, and tried to hold his grip till he could get to the stove. But he was human, he was a cashier, and he stopped a moment, to make sure of the signature. Then he came near to fainting. Fan me, Mary, fan me. They are the same as gold. Oh, how lovely, Edward. Why? Signed by Harkness. What can the mystery of that be, Mary? Edward, do you think, look here, look at this. 15, 15, 15, 34. 38,500. Mary, the sack isn't worth $12, and Harkness apparently has paid about par for it. And does it all come to us, do you think, instead of the 10,000? Why, it looks like it. And the checks are made to bearer, apostrophe to. Is that good, Edward? What is it for? A hint to collect them at some distant bank, I reckon. Perhaps Harkness doesn't want the matter known. What is that, a note? Yes. It was with the checks. It was in the Stevenson handwriting, but there was no signature. It said, I am a disappointed man. Your honesty is beyond the reach of temptation. I had a different idea about it, but I wronged you in that, and I beg pardon, and do it sincerely. I honor you, and that is sincere too. This town is not worthy to kiss the hem of your garment. Dear sir, I made a square bet with myself that there were 19 debauchable men in your self-righteous community. I have lost. Take the whole pot, you are entitled to it. Richards drew a deep sigh, and said, it seems written with fire, it burns so. Mary, I am miserable again. I too. Ah, dear, I wish to think, Mary, he believes in me. Oh, don't, Edward, I can't bear it. If those beautiful words were deserved, Mary, and God knows I believed I deserved them once, I think I could give the $40,000 for them. And I would put that paper away, as representing more than gold and jewels, and keep it always. But now we could not live in the shadow of its accusing presence, Mary. He put it in the fire. A messenger arrived, and delivered an envelope. Richards took from it a note and read it. It was from Burgess. You saved me, in a difficult time. I saved you last night. It was at cost of a lie, but I made the sacrifice freely, and out of a grateful heart. None in this village knows so well as I know how brave, and good and noble you are. At bottom you cannot respect me, knowing as you do of that matter of which I am accused, and by the general voice condemned. But I beg, that you will at least believe, that I am a grateful man. It will help me to bear my burden. Signed, Burgess. Apostrophe, saved, once more. And on such terms. He put the note in the lyre. I wish I were dead, Mary, I wish I were out of it all. Oh, these are bitter, bitter days, Edward. The stabs, through their very generosity, are so deep and they come so fast. 3 days before the election each of 2,000 voters suddenly found himself in possession of a prized memento, one of the renowned bogus double eagles. Around one of its faces was stamped these words. The remark I made to the poor stranger was around the other face was stamped these. Oh, and reform. Signed, Pinkerton. Thus the entire remaining refuse of the renowned joke was emptied upon a single head, and with calamitous effect. It revived the recent vast laugh, and concentrated it upon Pinkerton, and Harkness's election was a walkover.
Within 24 hours after the Richardses had received their checks, their consciences were quieting down, discouraged. The old couple were learning to reconcile themselves to the sin which they had committed. But they were to learn, now, that a sin takes on new and real terrors, when there seems a chance that it is going to be found out. This gives it a fresh, and most substantial and important aspect. At church the morning sermon was of the usual pattern. It was the same old thing said in the same old way. They had heard them 1,000 times, and found them innocuous, next to meaningless, and easy to sleep under. But now it was different. The sermon seemed to bristle with accusations. It seemed aimed straight, and specially at people who were concealing deadly sins. After church they got away from the mob of congratulators, as soon as they could, and hurried homeward, chilled to the bone that they did not know what vague, shadowy, indefinite fears. And by chance they caught a glimpse of Mr. Burgess as he turned a corner. He paid no attention to their nod of recognition. He hadn't seen it, but they did not know that. What could his conduct mean? It might mean 12 dreadful things. Was it possible that he knew that Richards could have cleared him of guilt in that bygone time, and had been silently waiting for a chance to even up accounts? At home, in their distress they got to imagining that their servant might have been in the next room listening when Richards revealed the secret to his wife that he knew of Burgess's innocence. Next Richards began to imagine that he had heard the swish of a gown in there at that time. Next, he was sure he had heard it. They would call Sarah in, on a pretext, and watch her face. If as he had been betraying them to Mr. Burgess, it would show in her manner. They asked her some questions which were so random and incoherent and seemingly purposeless, that the girl felt sure that the old people's minds had been affected by their sudden good fortune. The sharp and watchful gaze which they bent upon her frightened her, and that completed the business. She blushed, she became nervous and confused, and to the old people these were plain signs of guilt, guilt of some fearful sort, or other. Without doubt she was a spy and a traitor. When they were alone again they began to piece many unrelated things together, and get horrible results out of the combination. When things had got about to the worst, Richards was delivered of a sudden gasp and his wife asked, "Oh, what is it? What is it?" The note, Burgess's note. Its language was sarcastic, I see it now. He quoted, "At bottom you cannot respect me, knowing, as you do, of that matter of which I am accused. Oh, it is perfectly plain now, God help me. He knows that I know. You see the ingenuity of the phrasing. It was a trap, and like a fool, I walked into it. And Mary, oh, it is dreadful. I know what you are going to say. He didn't return your transcript of the pretended test remark. No, kept it to destroy us with. Mary, he has exposed us to some already. I know it well. I saw it in 12 faces after church. Ah, he wouldn't answer our nod of recognition. He knew what he had been doing. In the night the doctor was called. The news went around in the morning that the old couple were rather seriously ill, prostrated by the exhausting excitement growing out of their great windfall, the congratulations, and the late hours, the doctor said. The town was sincerely distressed, for these old people were about all it had left to be proud of now. 2 days later the news was worse. The old couple were delirious, and were doing strange things. By witness of the nurses, Richards had exhibited checks for $8,500? No, for an amazing sum, $38,500. What could be the explanation of this gigantic piece of luck? The following day the nurses had more news and wonderful. They had concluded to hide the checks, lest harm come to them, but when they searched they were gone from under the patient's pillow, vanished away. The patient said, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.